always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
The likelihood there will be a trial in the classified documents case before the election is fading fast. Judge Eileen Cannon has officially taken a May 20th trial date off the calendar, saying there were too many pretrial motions and legal issues to resolve before a trial could go forward. Some of the issues have sat for months, and some are not even scheduled for hearings until later this month or June. The special counsel tonight declined to comment, but David, this delay makes it all but certain the classified documents case will not go to trial before the election.
4:06, and welcome to this hump day edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp show. That was the good news yesterday for Donald Trump on the legal front. Today he had some good news as well. The Georgia Court of Appeals said that it will take up the question of whether Fulton County DA Fannie Willis should be booted from the election subversion racketeering case. So Donald Trump is just winning these cases left and right. It's like he has a horse show in his pocket. We'll talk with that and many, many issues today. Joey V is in studio with me on the Wheels of Steel. Joey, how are you, my friend?
Doing damn fine.
Staying safe from the tornadoes. And if you are watching live on our News Talk STL website, watching the stream, you can see my partner there in Senator Nick Schor's office. He is in the swamp remote today. Tim, how are you, my friend?
Doing great, Chris. Doing great, Joey. Storm clouds outside once again here in mid-Missouri. Sorry, guys. Probably heading your way again for another wave. And definitely storm clouds underneath the Capitol Dome. We have the House and the Senate both in session this afternoon. And, Chris, there was some big news out of Jefferson City this morning. Governor Mike Parson announcing he will sign the defund abortion provider Planned Parenthood bill tomorrow. Another huge victory for the General Assembly.
There's been some rumblings this week in the Senate. Haven't gotten much work done today. Give us an update, Tim, or this week. Give us an update of the proceedings in the Senate today.
Well, there's a very good reason for that. Actually, Chris, yesterday was the most productive day in the Senate. Excellent. In weeks. They churned through about 7 or 8 different House bills, which they put some Senate amendments on. Some actually were sent to the governor's desk. So we kind of had a return to normal where we have a lot of bills moving back and forth between the chambers. The lull, there has been a couple lulls in the action, and that's for a very good reason. The House and Senate budget chairman, Cody Smith in the House, Lincoln Huff in the Senate, have been working very feverishly and diligently together to try to craft the state's approximately $50 billion budget. So they're basically pre-conferencing the budget. They're keeping their caucuses updated so they can present a final product in the Senate tomorrow and then in the House on Friday to meet the budget deadline. Don't yet know if they're going to make that budget deadline or not. Look, even if they don't, folks, the world's not going to come to an end. The governor could easily call a concurrent special session next week for the budget. But that's where some of the pauses have been, because they're trying to hammer out all the budget differences. I just got an update from Cody Smith, the budget chairman. He said they're extremely close. They just have to verify all the numbers. As you can imagine, in a $50 billion budget, there's a lot of T's to cross, I's to dot, and decimal points to check as well.
And I was reading in the Post Disgrace today, and others have been commenting on that it's very, very rare for the legislature to miss a budget deadline. I think the last one, the only one, was 1997 or something like that, or has it happened before? Am I correct, Tim?
I don't believe it's happened since 1997. My memory of the legislature goes back to about 2004. I entered in 2006. So I don't believe it's happened since then. So 97, I'll even take the Post Disgrace's word for it. That's probably the last time it happened, if that's what they're saying is true.
All right. Before we get into this Georgia Court of Appeals decision, Tim, we'll tell everybody who we're going to be talking to today. Yes, at 4:24, we're going to speak with Jack Fitzhenry. He's a legal fellow the Heritage Foundation. He will be subbing for our friend Zach Smith today. Of course, we're going to talk about the developments in the Donald Trump trial and some of the trials that are some of the cases that are before the Supreme Court. At 4:45, Chris's Corner, I'm going to do a follow-up on my Chris's Corner that I did last week on unity. It's in regards to the state convention that happened in Springfield. We haven't talked much about that. I'll explain why. At 5:07, we'll have the speaker's stump speech. Tim?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the fact that the Stormy Daniels courtroom case, the hush money trial, the Trump trial in Manhattan is nothing but trash. I found a clever little article from The Spectator, and they pointed out all the reasons why that is so. So I thought I'd nutshell that for all y'all. As Chris, you talked about in the top, it looks like all the lawfare against Donald Trump is crumbling before the left's very eyes.
And I wanted to make a correction. I'm going to give my opinion of what why I haven't talked about what happened at the state convention last weekend from my point of view.
Okay.
So I just wanted to correct that. And at 5:24, Levi Hart, he is the senior investment officer manager at Thrive St. Louis, good friends of ours with the station. They do a great deal of good work on the pro-life front. We're going to talk to him about that this is the baby's eighth year in a row, that they're going to have wave the life banner high over St. Louis. We'll talk about giving to that great organization. So we've got a full show here on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on News Talk SDL. All right, probably the big story of the day, Tim, is this Georgia Court of Appeals. They were going to let the Donald Trump appeal that ruling that says that Fannie can stay on the case. Give us your expertise on this.
So I actually, Chris, had lost track of this case. I spoke with one of my colleagues in Georgia last week when I was at the Election Integrity Conference, and I said, what's going on with the Fannie Willis matter? And they said, you know, it's extremely quiet in the Peach State. It's been put on the way back burner. And then lo and behold, here we go. A few days later, we have this update. I didn't realize that that her continued prosecution of the case had been appealed. And now that the Court of Appeals in Georgia is going to take a hard look at this, Chris, I don't see how that case is going to properly proceed to trial before November. This just proves the point I and many other legal scholars, much smarter than me, have been making. This is what happens when you engage in political lawfare instead of proper legal prosecution. Thank goodness we have two plus centuries of American jurisprudence that even when a ridiculous, horrible, terrible case is brought, because of all of the mechanisms in our jurisprudential system, especially in criminal defense land, eventually cases like this will crack and fall apart. These are not good cases. They should not have been brought. This is political lawfare, not proper prosecution. And it's good to see that maybe some justice will eventually be served.
And let's refresh everyone's memories on this case. Donald Trump said that Fannie Willis should be disqualified from this case because she was dating someone, the lead investigative attorney on the case. There were all type of questions on when that relationship began. There are a lot of questions on was there truth being told when that investigation began? There were allegations that she paid for her own trip and he paid for his own trip. She paid for everything in cash. Tim, is this a good appeal, do you think? Can they win this appeal?
I think it's possible. And let's remind our listeners as well of what the decision was. The original decision was very Solomon-esque, right? Remember the original decision. The court said, well, you're going to have to choose one or the other. Either the lead investigator goes or Fannie Willis, you go. If that was the choice, that was the decision of the judge. Fani, of course, said, well, I'll stay because if I go, then another if she were to have chosen herself to have gone, the lead investigator could have stayed. They would have had to have found an entirely new prosecutorial office in the state of Georgia to pick up this case. I'm going to bet that no other prosecutor in Georgia was going to touch this case with a 30-foot pole. So she went ahead and shed the lead investigator, and she decided to keep herself and her office on the case. Now, I believe what's being appealed is, remember there was a rather explicit record kept during this trial. Remember, she testified. There was a whole host of witnesses. Chris, the facts of that case, the facts that were displayed were damning. There was a lot of damning evidence. So I think what they're saying is, how in the world did that trial judge decide that you could keep one or the other? They both needed to go, right? Mm-hmm. The facts that were deduced in that case showed that Fani Willis was, let's say, incompetent at best and incredibly corrupt at worst. And so I have a feeling they're taking the findings of fact from that trial court decision, and they're taking it up to the Court of Appeals, and they're saying to the Court of Appeals, as a matter of law, there's no way that Fani Willis can continue with this matter. She should have been prevented from proceeding. She should have been excused from this matter. She should have been disqualified.
And the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, their editorial board, has said that these appellate judges, quote, are not known for moving swiftly. So there's no telling when this case may get going. Coming up, Tim, at 4:24, of course, we'll talk with Jack Fitzhenry. He is taking over for Zach Smith today. He's a legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Of course, we'll talk to him about this case, the case yesterday that was put on hold indefinitely, the Stormy Daniels case in New York. She is testifying again today, Tim, so this was not a one-day affair. Do you think she'll watch her mouth this time, or will she get some more tawdry details into the jurors' minds?
I think that there's quote, no love lost between Stormy and Trump. And I read some very interesting statements from the judge yesterday. And remember, this is a very well-known, very liberal-leaning judge. And the comments he made were pretty amazing, considering the fact that he's probably no fan of Donald Trump. He basically said that the testimony of Stormy Daniels devolved into a place that was completely and utterly necessary. And he instructed the prosecution to move along. So I don't know what's going to happen on round two, but I have a feeling that the judge's aggravation is going to put a second round of Stormy Daniels' testimony on a very short leash. And I'm going to discuss why that is in the speaker stump speech today at 5:07.
Tim, what type of effect will it have on the appeal I've lost my train of thought on that. Darn it.
If they strike her testimony?
No,
or something
it was,
like that?
It was regarding something, but it'll come to me sometime.
Okay.
We'll be in a commercial or something that'll come to me. Hey, I want to, before we, go to break, I want to bring up that, I think we played a clip from it yesterday about, Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York.
Oh.
Said that black kids don't know what a computer is. And, you know, and I said, you know, if black kids don't know what a computer is, I think that's a testament of the sorry school system in New York State and New York City. Well, Tim, of course, she knew what she said was a mistake. So she put out a statement today trying to clean it up.
Here comes the statement.
Statement. She said, right now we have I'm going to read it like she would say it. She said, right now we have young black kids growing up in the Bronx who don't even know what the word computer is. Oh, that's what she said. They don't know these things. That's what she said yesterday. Excuse me. Here's what she said today. Of course black children in the Bronx know what computers are. The problem is that they too often lack access to the technology needed to get on track to high-paying jobs in emerging industries like AI. And this is where you bring yourself, make it all about you, and this is a typical politician move. Her next sentence was, that's why I've been focused on increasing economic opportunity since day one of my administration, and I will continue that fight to ensure every New Yorker has a shot at a good paying job.
Chris, if we were playing politician buzzword bingo, our yes. cards would be full, wouldn't we? We'd both be yelling bingo.
Yeah. Turn a negative around and focus it on the thing that you have been supposedly focusing on and working. It's pretty good spin, but let me put it this way. It's a pretty good attempt at spin. But not very good. One more story, Tim, before we go to break. Have you been have you been following this weird story about the soldier who's been detained in Russia? He was stationed in South Korea, but I think he somehow went to another country, flew to Russia. He basically went AWOL. His unit didn't know. And to see his quote unquote girlfriend, apparently he got into some type of domestic situation with his girlfriend. Police were called, and now he's being detained by the Russians. I don't even know where to begin with how stupid this is.
Yeah, I've only caught bits and pieces of this. Apparently, Chris, he's being held on suspicion of theft charges and is in a pretrial detention. Boy, you don't want to be in pretrial detention in the old Soviet Union.
Because as we've seen with Gershkovich, it gets extended every 6 months.
Yeah. Chris, apparently the army has simply confirmed that this soldier was detained on charges of criminal misconduct. We know not much more than that. So, Chris, yeah, remember, was it a year ago where that one soldier kind of went crazy and like sprinted into North Korea across the DMZ? Yeah. And hey, look, I'm sure being in faraway countries serving the U.S. military is a very stressful situation. I don't know. I wonder if this is another case of maybe some mental distress something.
I think this is a case of love, Tim. He fell in love with a Russian woman. Apparently,
there's a woman involved.
Apparently, this woman had immigrated to South Korea and he was stationed there, fell in love with her. She went back to Russia. He kind of went AWOL and went to the country, apparently beat her up, and the police came, and now he's going to be in a gulag for the next who knows when. So
never chase love in a foreign country, especially one that's not a big believer in constitutional rights.
I agree with that. As I said, coming up 424, Jack Fitzhenry, legal fellow of the Heritage Foundation. Chris's Corner at 445 on Unity, 507 speaker stump speech, and at 524, Levi Hart of Thrive of St. Louis. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
TikTok is now suing the U.S. government over a potential nationwide ban. Parent company ByteDance claims the newly signed law violates users' First Amendment rights. President Biden signed the law in April, giving the Chinese-owned platform ByteDance 9 months to sell the app and a possible three-month extension if a sale is in progress.
Now it makes it more likely that TikTok will try to delay this law from going into effect, do that through a legal motion, and say that pause the law.
429 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. And Tim, we got a newbie with us today filling in for Zach Smith. Zach Smith is Jack Fitzhenry, legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Good. You heard that clip there about TikTok is suing. TikTok is claiming that the law violates the First Amendment rights of 170 million American users. Jack, are they correct?
I think that's a bit of a stretch, to put it mildly. It's sort of convenient for a foreign-owned corporation to want to interpose the speech rights of millions of Americans as a barrier to, you know, its own negative legal consequences here. But I don't think that they're ultimately going to prevail on this by trying to erect that constitutional barrier to the sale. Suffice it to say, we have some really interesting First Amendment cases going on this term at the Supreme Court. Some of them will address the intersection between First Amendment rights and social media platforms. So I'm not going to pretend that the answer is in all cases very clear. But I can tell you that we have a long legal tradition here in this country of regulating communications infrastructure and doing so in the interest of national security and national defense. The First Amendment doesn't bar that. I sort of doubt that it will bar it in TikTok's case as well.
Jack, Tim Jones here. Thanks for being with us today. Jack, just kind of as a kind of 35,000 foot proposition, I wanted to ask you about the state of affairs of all of the current, what we've been calling lawfare cases against the former president, Donald Trump, and how they all appear to be crumbling in different aspects before our very eyes. The Alvin Bragg case is in its fourth week, and people are starting to ask, you know, when are they going to get around to proving the facts of the alleged crimes that were committed? We just talked about in our last segment about the fact that the Fannie Willis case has now been, her continued representation has been appealed to the Georgia Court of Appeals on the Jack Smith case. That case has been indefinitely postponed, likely till after the election, so on and so forth. Jack, talking about, you just mentioned something that's a long history in our country. We have a long history of not persecuting political opponents. Is this kind of what you would expect to happen when people don't necessarily worry about facts and law, and they just are dead set on political persecutions?
Yeah, I think that's precisely what we ought to expect. When cases are poorly constructed, it doesn't matter what area of the law it's in, they're liable to fall apart sooner rather than later. Now, of course, these cases have their similarities. They have their different areas of focus. We know that in the case that Alvin Bragg is bringing, that the predicate acts, the supposed crimes, were ones that had been investigated both by his office and by federal prosecutors and attorneys who took sober look at these proposed charges, had repeatedly passed on them, right? Because they're almost impossibly weak and implausible. But nonetheless, we know that eventually political pressure got the best of people who are supposed to be officers of the court, who have ethical obligations to the law, even though they may in some instances be politically elected officials. Our judicial system is ultimately designed to vet these sorts of claims. It should be encouraging, I think, to lots of people concerned about the rule of law that cases this week would kind of break apart upon impact with the reality of the law as it's interpreted in our court system. So, you know, these cases are not exactly dead yet. They're running into snags. It's still possible that the New York trial may reach a verdict before the election. But the others seem to be stalled indefinitely at this moment.
Speaking with Jack Fitzhenry, he's a legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Jack, we've seen all of the unrest on our campuses around the nation. A lot of people are starting to get fed up with it, including a group of conservative federal judges who have sent a letter to Columbia University saying they will not hire graduates of the university in response to the pro-Palestinian campus protests. Your thoughts on that?
It's an interesting gesture. Sometimes the only way to reach people who are terribly concerned by things like prestige is to take away the possibility of earning certain merit badges. I had the opportunity to clerk when I came out of law school. Some of the best work years I'll ever have. I was terribly lucky. These opportunities to work with judges, they're competitive. There's something that students, especially at these elite law schools like Columbia, are very desirous of. And it's not the first time that federal judges have come out in recent years and said, listen, we're not going to be taking students from these particular schools or from certain particular schools because the way either those institutions or their students, sometimes the faculty, are behaving. So a couple years ago, Judge Ho from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, joined, I think, by Judge Branch from the 11th, put out a letter saying to Yale, you know, the lack of viewpoint diversity and the lack of, you know, free speech protections for dissenting views at schools like Yale leads us to think that the types of lawyers being trained at these schools are not fit to serve in our chambers. And so, you know, after a certain point, we're going to decline to hire them as clerks. So this partakes of a similar spirit. Somewhat ironically, it's you know, free speech is still involved, but in a different way, right? It's the kind of excess of license that's being given to certain viewpoints and certain groups of students to say anything and everything, no matter how kind of intimidating or even terrifyingly violent it can become. You know, hopefully the consequences encourage some of these folks to see reason, to confine their protests to the times and manners that are more appropriate. But I'm a little skeptical that it's ultimately going to bring a lot of these protests to heel, frankly.
Jack Fitzhenry, legal fellow at the Mies Center of the Heritage Foundation, our guest here this afternoon. Jack, I wanted to talk about a series of cases, one which you wrote an article on way back in August of last year. We've spoken with your colleague, Zach Smith, about these quite a bit, but probably not in a while, with the Supreme Court term wrapping up its oral arguments. And now we're all anxiously awaiting all the hand downs that'll come over the next couple months or so. I wanted to remind our audience that there's a series of cases involving the administrative state that I know that sounds very boring and tedious, but Jack, this is a long line of jurisprudence dealing with the Chevron doctrine that I've been fascinated with. I'm a recovering attorney myself, and you know, I'm a recovering legislator, and so you know, many of us know about the administrative state and how much it affects, especially small businesses in our country. Jack, could you remind our listeners of how monumental these decisions could be, especially if they do damage to or even overturn potentially the Chevron doctrine?
Sure. So it's always good to remind folks that there's a hope for life after being a lawyer. as it concerns the administrative state, and the administrative state is very much concerning. I mean, it's unlikely that any of us will find ourselves in front of the SEC for securities violations, I would think. My portfolio is pretty bland, but there are, you know, dozens upon dozens of federal executive branch agencies. They regulate top to bottom most everything you could conceive of. Even if you're not finding yourself on the receiving end of enforcement proceedings, the costs, you know, the cost of doing business can be raised exponentially. So there's a few cases in the hopper this term that the Supreme Court has already heard, will decide by June or July at the very latest. The one you mentioned has to do with the Chevron doctrine. For your listeners, that's a doctrine that says that judges must give deference to reasonable agency interpretations of ambiguous laws. Maybe that sounds confusing. Maybe it sounds sort of anodyne and unconcerning. But think about what judges are employed to do in every other instance, right? Judges are employed to use independent judgment to give impartial justice in every case and just to say what the law means. But Chevron tells them to do something different. It says, don't be impartial. Don't give the law its best reading. You, judge, must put aside your duty and accept what the agency says the law is. And that's true even when the agency itself is a party to the case, which means there is some other party, usually a regulated entity, a small business, an individual, whose argument doesn't get heard with the same favorable ear, right? There's a thumb on the scale in a Chevron case. So, you know, it's a really concerning aberration in the way that our courts operate. It's not the norm, but suddenly when the federal government in the form of an agency is a party, they get an easier shake. So that's sort of the conceptual problem with Chevron. We have two twin cases before the Supreme Court right now. They're both brought by small businesses. Incidentally, it's two different fishing companies or owners of relatively small fishing vessels who have challenged the Chevron doctrine. They've asked the court to overturn it once and for all. When we heard arguments in this case, I think it was back in January is when the court actually heard them. It seemed like a pretty good day for the fishermen. It seemed like the court was broadly skeptical of the doctrine, even though it's been around for nearly 40 years now. But they're coming around to see what some of the conceptual and constitutional problems are in this arrangement where judges have to defer to a coordinate branch. But how big the decision is going to be, how important it will be, depends on exactly how they rule. So there are ways in which they could rule for the fishermen and sort of get them out from under a single burdensome regulation, but still keep forms of deference around. So we just don't know yet how deep into the roots of this system they're going to go. Are they going to tear the whole thing out, say no more deferring to agencies by judges? Or are they going to say, well, in some instances, we can still allow deference? There's still a lot of uncertainty there. And that will have everything to do with how important and impactful this decision ultimately is.
And finally, Jack, did I read somewhere that the court is going to take up next term a case about ghost guns, their regulation?
Oh, I'm not certain about that. It's possible they've granted cert on it. There is outstanding litigation about certain types of kits that manufacturers will sell. I know that there's litigation out there talking about the sort of long tradition we have in this country of gunsmithing, of you know, being able to make our own firearms, and thus, you know, the efforts by the federal government, by certain agencies, to outlaw them or to regulate these kits as though they were fully formed firearms is a legal issue that's brewing up there. I couldn't say for certain whether the court has granted cert on it, though.
Jack, thank you so much for filling in for Zach. Did a great job. Look forward to speaking with you again. If folks want to read more of your work, how can they do that?
Well, they can find me at heritage.org, or I write very often for our news outlet, The Daily Signal.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Jack, and have a great evening.
Thanks, you too.
And Chris is cornered at 4:45. I'm going to do a follow-up on my unity speech. I read an article this morning from Representative Adam Schwadron. Gave me an idea. It was regarding the state convention that happened in Springfield. We'll touch on that a little bit when we come back on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
While Senator Bernie Sanders has gone so far as to warn that the war in Gaza could be Biden's Vietnam. And when it comes to a crucial voting block, young voters, Biden's approval rating has dropped 12 points in 2 months. A sign, Gale, of just how fraught this issue is for him, especially in an election year.
4:49 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, and more bad news for Joe Biden. He's losing the youth vote, partly, I'm sure, because of the student loans and Israel. Bad news, Tim.
It really is, Chris. And it's, look, I know polls don't vote, and the only vote that matters is the one that occurs in November. But I'm telling you, trends are revealing. And unless Joe Biden reverses the trend line over the next 6 months, can you believe that, Chris? We're under 6 months now to the election. He's going to have a tough time getting reelected with an approval rating in the 30s.
Joe Biden's chances for reelection look dim. Looks like Republican nominee for president and others will do well, but it's going to take unity as well. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that next on Chris's Corner.
Chris.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
Representative Adam Schwadron authored an article yesterday for the Missouri Times addressing Republican unity or lack thereof and the chaos that ensued from last weekend's state convention in Springfield. Schwadron wrote this: at the 2024 Republican state convention, certain individuals staged a coup and overthrew the Donald Trump-endorsed slate of candidates. As a result of the fallout from this takeover from a small but organized group, many left in anger at the way the whole process was handled. The actions of that small group at the state convention has sped up the damage to the Missouri Republican Party. It is my hope that this damage is not permanent. The previous week, I delivered a keynote speech on unity to the Tesson Ferry Republican Club. Here's an excerpt from my speech. I said, arguably the greatest Republican president, Ronald Wilson Reagan, once stated, my 80% friend is not my 20% enemy. Voting in alignment with your district, your state, or your conscience does not brand you a rhino if the vast majority of your votes adhere to Reagan's 80-20 principle. You know, the dictionary defines populism as, quote, a political approach that strives to appeal to ordinary people who feel that their concerns are disregarded by established elite groups. Citizens organizing to voice discontent with their government is fundamental to our constitutional liberties. Throughout history, populist movements have ousted tyrannical governments and entrenched incumbents and favored candidates in this country. Populist movements can sometimes resemble a flamethrower. When controlled, flamethrowers serve constructive purposes like managing wildfires or clearing land. However, if the wind unexpectedly shifts or picks up speed, a productive situation can swiftly turn destructive. I believe there are two principles from my favorite book, 48 Laws of Power, that should be implemented in any political movement. One, Law 45. Advocate for change, but avoid overhaul. While change is universally acknowledged as necessary, people tend to resist it in their daily routines. Expressing innovation can trigger backlash. If in a position of power or striving to establish one, show deference to traditional practices, introduce change gradually, presenting it as an enhancement of the past. Another law that populist movement needs to adhere to is Law 47. Know when to stop after achieving victory. Quote, the moment of triumph often harbors the greatest danger. Overconfidence can lead to exceeding your initial objectives, engendering more adversaries than victories. Guard against hubris. Prudence and strategic planning are indispensable. Set a goal, halt upon its establishment. You know, despite its moniker, populist movements frequently exhibit a propensity for exclusivity by erecting purity tests as barriers to entry. Look, someone espousing racial supremacist ideologies, someone with a criminal history, or other obviously disqualifying factor should not be allowed to register and seek office as a Republican in Missouri. However, I oppose imposing arbitrary written purity tests for Republican candidates. The primary elections that serve as litmus tests for identifying genuine conservative Republicans. If a rhino, Republican name only, is inadvertently elected due to them misrepresenting their views during the campaign, then all hell is going to break out against them if they're voting against their constituents' wishes, and they'll have hell to pay for deceiving them. But if they're reelected, then maybe they are representing the views of their constituents. You know, early in my political career, I heard a maxim that has stayed with me throughout my 25-year political career. It says this, politics is about addition and multiplication, not subtraction and division. Regrettably, our party is divided right now, but I hope we can come together and heed the wise words of Jesus when he said a house divided against itself cannot stand. And that is Chris's Corner.
Mm-hmm. I heard it was a very interesting convention indeed.
It was a very interesting convention. One of the reasons I'm going to tell folks I haven't, my wife was a delegate. I was a delegate as well. I was there at the convention. My wife was on the Nick Chairman slate that was going to be voted on to go to the convention. He withdrew his slate. You know, the main reason why I haven't said anything about it is I didn't want folks out there thinking that I, in any way, because people have a way of misinterpreting your words on the radio, Tim, as you know, and can read into mm-hmm. things that you didn't say, but you did say it. And I didn't want anybody to think I had sour grapes or anything like that, because Becky and I weren't going to the convention. I don't. I've always said when I was asked to be an alternate delegate, I said, you know, I'll do it. But I've always felt that those type of positions were for the grassroots folks, because they're the ones that have worked hard and been in the trenches mm-hmm. and done the work. So those slots are for them. So no, I have no sour grapes at all about not going to the convention. That's about $5,000 that we will not be
you got that right.
spending. So those that are delegates have a great time, have a lot of fun. But I do hope, Tim, that for the sake of our party, the sake of our nation, that the Republican Party can come together and coalesce and put Donald Trump in the White House and vote against Joe Biden. Yesterday, in the Indiana primary, Nikki Haley got 22% of the vote. We need everybody. That's a telltale sign.
We do. Yeah. And I'm a much bigger fan of accountability versus vetting. It's really hard to vet someone who has zero record, because all you're doing is taking their word for it. You know, yeah. There's a lot of great organizations that actually do legislative scorecards after someone's actually been in office. And it's groups like Club for Growth, American Conservative Union. There's a ton of very respectable national scorecards, and they do deep dives into legislative records. I'm more of a fan of that. You know, let's see what people actually do once they get in office and start voting on actual bills.
507 Speaker Stump Speech, and at 524 Levi Hart, Senior Investment Officer Manager at Thrive St. Louis. You are listening. Oh, I forgot. I added another minute on there. Sorry about that. Tim, tell us what the 507 Speaker Stone speech is going to be today. Thank you, Joy, for reminding me.
Yes, I'm going to do a little deep dive with a little great little article from the Spectator World about why the Trump trials, especially the one in New York City, are nothing but trash. We're going to get a little deeper into that one.
Exactly. And again, 5:24, we'll speak with Levi Hart. He is the Senior Investments Officer Manager at Thrive St. Louis, and we know the fabulous work that they do in helping mothers who have decided to keep their babies, help them in that process, not just helping them while they're pregnant, but also helping them afterwards with needs for them and the baby. Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.